me anyhow. And then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lip. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping ferns and basket weavers who sit and smile and fiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind and selfish loving deeds. Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their great white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and fiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful.
Free Radio Santa Cruz. My name is Anonymous Diva. You're listening to Room to Breathe, and in case you're wondering, all the songs on this show are either about insanity or by insane people. And we listened to Susie and the Banshees with Happy House, a great song by the Sugar Cubes, and for Elizabeth, who woke up dazed and confused and bewildered and all that this morning, I've got Find Your Mind by Luscious Jackson.
In all glory, all glory, together we hear the thunder. If the devil had wings, we know very slaves and sing the praise of all we have.
to wanna be na soka moaki na kuna to wanna be na soka moaki na kuna to wanna be na soka moaki.
Santa Cruz, Bathrobes Pierre's broadsides from 10 to 12.
Keep the profits highest, maybe. You're just a cheaper pair of hands. your bed. A bit your tart, you're nothing but heart. Shallow and vain, you got no brain. You even go down the drain like a lady today. Well, I listen to my mother and I join the type and pool. I listen to my lover and I put him through his school. But if I listen to the boss, I'm just a bloody fool and an underpaid engineer. I've been a sucker ever since I was a baby, as a daughter, as a wife, as a mother and a dear. But I fight them as a woman, not a lady. Fight them as an engineer.
And you are indeed listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides and to Peggy Seeger. I was going to be an engineer from her album Songs of Love and Politics, The Folkway Years, 1955 to 1992. That song, I was going to be an engineer, has been reissued on numerous labels, numerous times, sung by different people. It's a great song, and that's why I played it. You're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, a bi-weekly show concerned with local civil liberties here in Santa Cruz, particularly concerning poor people and those without houses, those who live outside, or those who occupy public spaces and are treated as lesser citizens because of how they look. And we've got a number of things on the agenda today. We'll be following up from our Friday show when we discussed the rape and assault of Linda Edwards the evening she died in early June. So far, no new developments on that score, but I will be encouraging people to contact the Sheriff's Department, the District Attorney's Office, even calling the mayor to encourage that the investigation proceed speedily and that charges be filed. I'm going to be talking about the Downtown Association. Downtown Association's, well, ambivalent status. I'd like to be friendly with them, but actually they are the authors of the downtown ordinances, making it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk near a shop, making it illegal to peacefully ask for spare change after dark from a sitting position, and with some 20 other restrictions. They're authors of attacks that created the hosts, the group of green shirts who walk around with grins as the eyes and ears of the police, actually sort of a private paramilitary force which serves as the reconnaissance force for the police force around these downtown ordinances. I'm interested in making sure that people's civil liberties, specifically mine and yours, don't fall by the wayside as a part of the greater shopping mandates that apparently are the major moral imperatives of our time here in downtown Santa Cruz. And in order to deal with that, I'm going to encourage you to call the Downtown Association to encourage them to use mediation. The new mediators funded by the city have set up an interim committee, an interim review group on downtown problems, wherein if an individual has a problem with a store, these three people on the interim group can be called. They will investigate and they will attempt to do some flashpoint mediating, which I think is a great idea. Human intervention instead of police intervention. And I encourage people who are on the streets who have problems with the merchants and have access to a phone to give a call to the individuals on this group. You can of course call me. I'm not on this group, at my HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom number, 423-HUF. That's 423-4833. If you've had a problem with a merchant, I will direct you to this group of three, or you can contact one of them and I'll be giving you their numbers too as the show continues. That's again mediation, not arrests, not force, a real beginning, a new beginning, hopefully, in downtown. I've got to tell you, I'm skeptical of how far we're going to get with this, but so far, there have been some positive indications. I've already seen signs that one problem that came up last Wednesday at the Food Not Bombs meal, where a woman accused Neil Coonerty and Georgiana's Cafe of kicking her out without cause, was investigated and may well be mediated. And I'll be discussing that later in the show as well. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, as long as we can continue, at 89.3 FM. And the call-in number here, in case you wish to join the conversation, and I'm going to put the phone right under my nose here so I will see it. Frequently don't. Call-in number here is, appropriately enough, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, or 427-3772. You're invited to call. If anything I'm saying perks your ire or your admiration or your interest, or you think you have something important or even, you know, maybe not so important to add, but something that you want to add to this dialogue. This dialogue really should be a dialogue. Right now it's a monologue, and I'm inviting the community to join here over the airwaves so we can really have an interactive conversation where everybody contributes something and the circle of concern grows. That's what we need. That's what I want anyway. That's why I'm doing this. I'd love to sound off, of course, but it's much more productive if you sound off as well. We're going to be talking about changes in the offing out at the River Street Open Air Shelter, or the field where people sleep at night, the only legal place to sleep in Santa Cruz. We're going to be discussing the Santa Cruz City Council's upcoming amendment to the sleeping ban, a pitiful minor amendment, but hopefully one that finally, 6 months delayed, is coming down the pike at the next Tuesday evening City Council meeting, which will be a week from tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the evening. And I'm going to encourage you to write a letter or two to Catherine Byers, just telling her to not only pass this damn thing, but to make a real change in the sleeping ban so that the other five-sixths of the people who sleep outside are no longer targets for police harassment, simply because in the current shelter emergency, and that's exactly what the city terms it since 1990, in this emergency, there can be no legal arrests, no legal tickets, no legal harassment of people for doing what they have to do every night here in Santa Cruz, and that is fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night, an action currently forbidden by the city's notorious anti-homeless sleeping ban, 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. It's illegal to be either asleep or covered up with blankets outside, in a vehicle, or in any building that is not a domicile. So, it's a correction on that. You can actually cover up with blankets in a car or a vehicle. You cannot sleep, however. And you can't cover up with blankets anywhere else. So, it's kind of funny what that resulted in 1990 people, because police kept not only arresting them and ticketing them for covering up with blankets, they would confiscate and destroy the blankets. This is our police department, yes, the Humane Police Department, then led by Chief Bassett and Deputy Chief Steve Belcher. Actually, it was Dunbow for a while, and then it was Belcher, who would deal with political protesters by stealing all their gear, and also with homeless people by stealing their gear. Actually, I would suppose that only some police officers liked to do this. Others were engaged in more fruitful activities, or other activities, anyway. So, it's not just in San Francisco under the notorious Matrix program under Mayor Jordan where people have been and are being harassed simply because of an economic status and life situation, A, that they can't help, or indeed, and then why, you know, we must face this head on and not feel guilty or uncomfortable about it. Sometimes people choose. Some people choose not to be a part of a capitalist, acquisitive, death-dealing society where people work for slave wages in order to pay exorbitant rents. And this doesn't mean that they're necessarily pigs on the public trough, and it doesn't mean that they are loafers, bums, or looking simply for handouts, as is the stereotype. They may be living, trying to live as frugally and as modestly and as freely as they can, and that's the case with a significant number of people in the Santa Cruz area. It always has been. Hopefully it always will be. It's some people regard it as a form of indulgence. I regard it as a form of liberation frequently. It can be a number of things depending on the individual, but it certainly can be no basis for harassment and discrimination, no legitimate basis. Whether that be at Lee Laboa, Peter Carota's Catholic Soup Kitchen, which has not in any way renounced its policy of turning away people because of their political orientation as an activist, turning away people because they're regarded as a deadhead or possibly somebody who has re-legalized marijuana, because marijuana was legal until the 30s here in this country. Whatever. The political message, the economic message cannot be the basis for discrimination legitimately here at public services or even at religious institutions that supposedly serve the poor and appeal to the community for funding on that basis. And in any case, we're going to be talking about the hosts, the green shirts, as I was saying, who are funded actually out of public funding, I'm told, by Supervisor Celia Scott. Public funding that to some extent is coerced through the Downtown Association. The Downtown Association coerces assessments from other merchants. Some of it comes from city and redevelopment funds. My understanding of this currently is a little hazy, but conversations I've had with Council Member Scott and other folks in Berkeley and Arcata who are facing a similar merchant scam whereby merchants are getting large amounts of public money essentially to lobby public agencies for anti-homeless laws and then to set up anti-homeless mechanisms like this hosts program, which runs around the mall telling people not to sit here, not to sit there, trying to act as a sort of a little fascist squad or fascism. Give me a few minutes to wake up and I'll pick up on this. In any case, they're engaging in a form of discriminatory treatment of people. They're not a neutral force, and that's really what I'd like to see. That's another concern of mine around these downtown mediators whom we met with last week. Kim Hallinan and Daniel Robin, funded by the city to go to the different groups who are having problems downtown with each other, namely the merchants, people on the street, homeless people, residents, older residents or younger residents who live downtown, the young people, all these groups, these mediators have been, you know, going to for the last 4 or 5 months. And they're hammering out a set of proposals around a downtown code of conduct, which I felt was very suspicious initially, because what we have had for the last 14 months is a set of unconstitutional laws, the downtown ordinances, which make it illegal for people to engage in innocent behavior. It's always been illegal to block the sidewalk. It's always been illegal to harass someone. We have one of the famous sidewalk singers, Elizabeth, just peeked in here. One of the most beautiful voices on the mall, I would add. If you ever get a chance to catch her, Just Kidnacked, do it. It's a wonderful show, politically relevant, easy on the ears, straight to the heart. Plug for Elizabeth there. And our skidmarks, Bob and Phil Free, the big three of the group, Just Kidding, who are part of the target of the hosts and the downtown ordinances. They've actually been harassed. Bob has been ticketed and arrested. All charges, of course, were dropped. But again, this doesn't make it any easier to be a musician, to be an activist downtown, to have police on your tail for essentially activity that helps the community, but that certain segments of the community, merchants, police, and bureaucrats, want to suppress. So we're going to be talking about the hosts. I'm going to be encouraging you to call the hosts in order to make them accountable to the general community, not just as a merchant goon squad, but as a group of individuals who will become truly sort of a mediating force open to everyone to resolve problems downtown. And I don't deny that problems occur. Many of the merchants downtown I have personal relationships with. I've lived here for 2 decades. I like them as individuals. I patronize their stores. Some of them, of course, I can't patronize their stores, even though I continue to like them as individuals, because they support and initiated these downtown ordinances. Such people as Frank, the owner of Game-A-Lot, is a fine man, and keep telling him, if only change his policies as one of the downtown commissioners. That's a group of merchants who have a group called the Downtown Commission that meets every month or so. this is the cesspool out of which the downtown ordinances arose, and that ran through last spring, or spring before last, spring of 1994. But I do support merchants downtown. I think we need to support, all of us need to support each other in many different ways. And I think it's important that we talk to people. That's the primary point. If there's a problem that arises, communication instead of sending in guys with nightsticks and guns who prefer not to go in many cases anyway because, I really don't know what they prefer, but that's what they said. I mean, there seems to be, some of my contacts with police recently indicated a lack of interest in arresting people for sitting on the sidewalk, a lack of interest in arresting people for peacefully asking for money. But when a problem arises, when some drunken guy is harassing people for spare change, that happens. It's important that the community take a response on this and that individuals not support this kind of behavior. But on the other hand, you've got to recognize what's really going on and that it's a human being who's doing this too, a human being who has to be responsible even if she or he is drunk. And there was a code which, not put in any law, but just a sort of an informal understanding that was developed at the beginning of the 80s by Jan Luby and Travelin' Tom Noddy, the bubble man and puppeteer and performer. And Tom still works with the Street Performers Guild, sort of an informal group, very informal, includes any performer on the streets here in Santa Cruz, to make sure that rather than laws, that there's a system, a flexible system of discussions, a flexible system of understandings that develops. I think the system with the Street Performers Guild, and if anybody can correct me if I'm wrong on this, something about people sort of supposed to move on after an hour if there's a concern by the merchant, and you know, they kind of spread around the performing and pass it down the mall so that no one place gets overexposed. Which is good, you know, and it's not a law, and it's not an ironclad thing which everybody has agreed to. It's an understanding. It's kind of a way of avoiding legalistic bickering and attorneys and cops, and it's a way of trying to maintain a much more flexible perspective, which I think would be very profitable for the other code conduct problems of the merchants. Complain about, and some citizens complain about, and council members Kennedy and Rotkin complain about. I think that, you know, when there are problems of violence, when there are problems where people feel intimidated, of course there are laws to deal with that, as we've always pointed out, we being groups opposed to the downtown ordinances, new set of anti-homeless laws, which is not only sort of growing up like bad weeds here in Santa Cruz and certain other towns. It was actually engineered out of a Sacramento think tank about 2 or 3 years ago by right-wing groups interested in putting down homeless people, putting down poor people, establishing a sort of, I would consider it to be sort of a fascist approach whereby you are giving police unbridled discretion to deal with classes of people that they don't like. And of course, fascism means many different things, but I think that's one of the things I think say that it means. But a code of conduct for the downtown is what the mediators are looking for, and what the merchants say they want, and is supposedly some of the mentality behind these ordinances. But of course, the ordinances already sets up a code of conduct, and it's all conduct which the merchants feel is more helpful in producing commercial district, which is fine for them, perhaps, although a lot of us feel the ambience of the downtown is best preserved by recognizing the many different groups that use the public areas, the very colorful, unique quality of the Santa Cruz community. And not trying to turn this place into a Carmel or a Capitola, and not doing what essentially is being done. The mall was straightened out and concretized and defoliated after the earthquake. What was essentially an expansion of the Marty Wormhout, John Laird pilot plan. Laird and Wormhout had a plan to experiment with one block of the mall based on Jack Bassett's then police chief's theories about removing trees and removing places to sit down and planters and much more vigorous street lighting. It was all sort of a sterile scene. What we have, what we got eventually was this entire mall done in this fashion, which has attempted to destroy, I think, the or transform the nature of the Santa Cruz, the organic life here, the ongoing community spirit, which I tend to look at one side of it. Admittedly, I'm not a merchant, but nonetheless, there's a whole fundamental healthy subculture here, which is partially transient, partially rooted in the town, but which high rents are seeking to drive out, which these ordinances are seeking to drive out, which modern society in the 90s, I think, is seeking to drive out this kind of free lifestyle. We call it countercultural lifestyle, whatever you will, throughout the country. And it's hopefully they're not going to succeed. And Free Radio Santa Cruz and my efforts are bent on making sure they don't succeed. And you are, in fact, listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. You are listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We are on 89.3 FM. And the call-in number here, and come on, folks, you've got telephones, and if you got ideas, don't just let them popple around in your own head, but send them out over the airways, send them to me, we can talk about them. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. 427-3772. 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Anything I'm saying seems to perk up your thoughts. So I'm kind of segueing into the show. I mean, we're already half an hour into the show, which goes till noon. And I guess I can start getting a bit more specific. Last thing we talked about on Friday was the very important, serious topic of the assault and rape of Linda Edwards on her hospital bed the night she died by a man named Brian Flanagan. He, San Francisco man, as far as I have been told, has not been indicted or charged or arrested with the crime that to many of us is obvious that he committed. He spent spent 12 hours, some of them in bed with Linda Edwards at her hospital room as she died, when she was completely, virtually incommunicado. There was no way she could have given consent. And the last thing actually that he heard from her was that she didn't want him around. And my concern is that the sheriff's office investigate this matter, and they, under the aegis of a detective named Wilson, Craig Wilson, claimed to be investigating a week after the death of Edwards. They did an autopsy, what's called a rape kit. They sent in those results to, they asked for the Department of Justice to do those results. They told me it was going to come back in 2 weeks. That was 4 weeks ago. And now they're telling me it'll be another 2 weeks. Of course, in my opinion, you do not have to press. You don't need the results of a rape kit to know, based upon, first of all, this man's admissions, which are on tape, in writing, and in front of witnesses. And second of all, the eyewitness reports of Linda LeMaster, Lighthouse Linda, activist who was at the bedside of Linda Edwards, and Doug, her companion, Linda Edwards' companion, before she died. So I encourage those who are interested in pressing on this issue to call the Sheriff's Office and Detective Wilson at 454-2311 to ask him what is holding up a report that finds that no consent was given, that unlawful touching and assault and rape occurred, and that the issue will be pressed for the district attorney's office. And the other place to call, that's Detective Wilson, 454-2311, is the DA's office at 454-2400. That's the district attorney. The sheriff issues the report, and then the district attorney, the public prosecutor, pursues the report and files the charges. Now, Linda has frequently been prosecuted by the district attorney's office. She's never suffered any misdemeanor convictions that I am aware of. Possibly she got a time served at one point for a one day in jail or something involving a takeover of a kitchen. like I did. We took over, peacefully took over kitchens when the county was reneging on its agreement to give the free meal a certified kitchen, which they needed to cook healthful food back in 1990, and finally got, I think in large part due to our efforts, in what was called Kitchen Quest. But Linda has never been convicted, although she's frequently been harassed and persecuted and prosecuted by the DA's office. But when it comes to prosecuting her batterers, her rapist, that doesn't happen. And I use the plural of batterers because Linda has been assaulted before. Linda was assaulted out of the free meal when she attempted to circulate a petition, and she got 60 names asking Karen Gillette to improve the quality of the food out there in the spring of 1992. And she also asked for an end to censorship because Karen's staff were tearing down flyers from the bulletin board that Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and other individuals were putting up. And false rumors were being spread about activists trying to close down the free meal when in fact they were simply trying to improve its quality. So anyway, Linda was assaulted out there, an assault witnessed by the head of the free meal at that time. And she, there were no charges filed, and there was no arrest made. Even the overseeing body, which is the William James Association, a sort of Paul Lee, Page Smith production, refused to do anything about this. They had some sort of, finally had a grievance hearing, which they ignored it. Homeless Action Network, which was the bureaucrat convention of the time, wouldn't do anything about it. The mayor of the city at that time, I believe it was, wasn't Jane Yokoyama, that was 91. It must have been Don Lane. Mayor Lane wouldn't do anything about it. In fact, he, when it was mentioned in public testimony, he spoke up for essentially the people who had witnessed and acquiesced to the battering of Edwards. Speaking, unfortunately, of Karen Gillette at that time, and ignored the concerns of the activists. Now, as I say, and as I said on Friday, and as a disclaimer, I believe that this is not, I'm not aware that this is happening out at the free meal and at the open-air shelter now, that is to say, that I'm not aware that there is an active campaign to harass and intimidate and censor political activists, and I'm glad to hear it. And I'm also pleased to say that Karen Gillette has been working with me and with others on publicizing, well, on sharing information. I don't want to say publicizing it because I don't think she does that much. And I was sorry to see that very few homeless people attended Linda Edwards' memorial service, and because no information got out. And I'm sorry that, that did not happen through the day center, the open-air shelter, or the free meal. And it could have happened. And I, of course, bear some responsibility for that because I only got out there the day before it happened. But I had understood that that was going to be communicated because I left messages with the with Karen Gillette and out of the open-air shelter, but Palmer So as well. And indeed, perhaps some information got out that I wasn't aware of. But batterers of activists apparently are not getting equal treatment. And I'm concerned that Linda Edwards' case, that she get justice. She, of all people, deserve justice and deserves justice. And we deserve justice for her. And again, I encourage you to call Detective Wilson of the Sheriff's Department at 454-2311 and at the District Attorney's Office at 454-2400. And I'm going to attempt to have a fact sheet out on this in the next week before the next show, which kind of runs through the chronology of events around the Linda Edwards affair, which is a pretty sordid matter, but, and a matter of some pain to me because I know the man who did this. He's a friend of mine, and I don't know what to say. I'm saying what I'm saying anyway, and that's what's going on. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, as I will repeat every few minutes, and since nobody is calling in on this phone, which is working, I'm just going to have to keep talking here, which I suppose suits me. Although maybe it'd be good if I put on a tape, had you hear a little of the Jolly Roger Comedy Hour. The number to call, however, in case you want to speak your piece, is 427-3772. The radio station, of course, is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. And you probably heard already if you've been listening to the station. I don't listen to it much. I probably should listen to it more. But the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, which regulates and in many cases attempts to suppress small radio stations, has been on the tail of free radio again. They called last week trying to track down whose phone was in the studio here and who the renter of this place was and so forth, who the landlord was. But the word I'm getting from Berkeley, which is sort of the grandmother, recently the grandmother of the radio stations, as Tom Reveille, a radio pirate from the early 90s, who called in a couple shows ago, has pointed out, there are certainly radio stations back in the Midwest and elsewhere that have been going on for a long time. But Berkeley's radio station, Free Radio Berkeley, has successfully tied up the FCC's attempts to secure an injunction, that is to say, a court order closing down that radio station. And as a consequence, they are, whatever their growling and threatening demeanor, they are really in less of a position of power at this point. Judge Wilkin, federal district court judge in San Francisco area, which also covers our area here, though somewhat complicated system, I think, but it still does cover our area, has ruled that in a January hearing, I think confirmed in April or thereabouts, I may get some of these dates wrong, that before the FCC can close anything down, they need to address free speech concerns. They can't just say, hey, you don't have a license, get out of town. The question is there a licensing procedure for small radio stations? Or are they just saying, hey, unless you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on lots of equipment so you can do 100 watts worth of power, you can't be here? And if they do that, they are, of course, discriminating against people who are poor, but who may be equally articulate, who are equally entitled to a radio station. It's not a question of whether you're articulate, of course, but equally eligible for a radio station simply based upon the fact that they have a right to do it. They have something to say. They're human beings, just like the big girls and boys who are doing the main radio schlocking here in the country. So the FCC has been here, but Berkeley informs me, nah, those are growls and threats. And there is a hearing coming up on the 14th, which I'm told, though, is likely to be more continuance. That is to say, the FCC is going to nervously kick it down the road. That's the report from Cornerstone Carroll. So there will continue to be an opening for people who want to be able to speak out on the air in free radio stations such as this. And if you are interested in speaking out on the air, you should give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz to try to sign up and come to the weekly or bi-weekly meetings at the Loudon Nelson Center at 7 o'clock. And again, I'm not quite sure whether there's one this week or next week. If anybody knows about that and anybody wants to call in, they might want to give the you listeners some more accurate information. It does happen to be week by week, and people who are interested in the term and sign up for a program and train themselves as to how to use the equipment, which is quite simple, and then put out their voices on the air. So, let's give you the Berkeley report. I'm always kind of running after Cornerstone Carol Denny, local activist up there, to try to get her to share both her tools and her information with us down here. She's an amazingly indefatigable, tireless person who goes after information, even if everyone hates her for it, if she thinks it's important that the community should know it. And she's recently checked out there's apparently a new ordinance in Berkeley. The Downtown Business Association up there and the Telegraph Avenue Association, both merchant consortiums, are trying to get an exemption in city law so they can serve alcohol outdoors, which is kind of ironic because there's a serious crackdown on poor people drinking, particularly if you're an older veteran. In other words, if you look homeless or seedy and you happen to have a brown paper bag with some booze in it, not if you're drunk, but if you have a bag with booze in it. And of course, people who don't have homes or people who are poor can't afford to go to restaurants and pay for restaurant space are in a position where they cannot legally drink. I mean, it's, you know, they suddenly become kids again. It becomes criminal for them to have a beer, which, you know, whether it be at the open-air shelter, where they'll get kicked out of the open-air shelter for drinking, or face that risk, or they are in a position where they, the laws say that one class of people can drink and the other class can't. And we're not talking about being drunk. Anybody who is drunk in a public place is in a different status. I mean, if you're acting drunk and abusive, or even just drunk, that's different. But drinking a beer is an infraction under the open container laws. And this is true in Santa Cruz. About a week ago at the Food Not Bombs meal in Loudoun Nelson Park, I was getting reports from homeless folks at the park there, some of whom are drunks on occasion, but some of whom are also drinkers on occasion. And they were being targeted by cops for simply having a cup of beer that they were drinking, and not because they were drunk, but because they were because they had a cup of beer. And it may seem trivial to you and me. I'm not a drinker. I mean, I can't stand it. But hey, it's important to be able to